The last time we spoke with Jim Fruchterman, he was contemplating the future after having the Arkenstone line of OCR products purchased by Freedom Scientific. Well, just over a year on, there are lots of exciting irons in the fire for Jim Fruchterman, in particular, Bookshare.org. Jim, it's always good to have you on Main Menu, and since we last spoke with you, which was over a year ago when the Arkenstone acquisition by Freedom Scientific was announced, a lot has happened, and I'd like to talk about Benetech in general at some point, but let's get to the good stuff first and talk about Bookshare.org. What is it? Tell us about what it is.
Bookshare.org is a copyright legal cross between Napster and the Talking Book program of the Library of Congress. And what we're doing is we're making it possible for people who have been scanning in books to share them with other people who have special needs, people with visual disabilities or learning disabilities, over the Internet. So the fact that one person has scanned that book means that another person can benefit and not have to scan that book again.
Now, when I spoke to you last year sometime about what we're going to do now that you're not going to make reading machines anymore, you did have this idea in the back of your head, and you used the term Bookster. I gather that wasn't a very good PR decision to use Bookster.
Oh, you know, I think it went over very well in the visually impaired field. People got it right away. But we decided we wanted to work with the publishers, and it was not a good name for a project that we would run by the publishers.
I guess you had two choices. You could have just taken your own legal advice and decided that the U.S. copyright law facilitated you doing this, or you could have worked with the publishers to kind of clear the air first, and I gather you took the latter course.
We definitely did. I mean, even though we didn't need to talk to the publishers, we felt it was important to cover what we were planning with them so that rather than objecting to this, they would support us. And I'm not sure that they're enthusiastic about the idea, but I think they acknowledge that it is permitted under U.S. law, and that as long as we spend some time thinking about issues that worry them and make some accommodations, they'll be happy to not sue us.
Now, you've obviously got to be reasonably confident that it's going to be next to impossible for people to give Bookshare.org books to other people. Is that right?
You know, impossible is not the objective. What we're trying to do is to make it reasonable in terms of ensuring that the content gets to the people that it should get to, people with disabilities, and doesn't get to other people. And so we all know that a person with a PC and a scanner can sit down and scan a book in 3 hours. So all we're trying to do is make it harder to get the books out of Bookshare than it is to scan it in yourselves, and if that's the case, then people won't be using us as a source for putting free books on the Internet, which is what the publishers are most worried about.
So in terms of the way that the blind user is going to be a part of this community, and of course a user with a print disability as well, they would scan their book, save it, and what, FTP it up to you? Is that how it will work?
Basically, they would come to our webpage and they would do a file transfer to us, and then we would turn it into something that's legally permitted under this U.S. copyright law exception. And what we've chosen to do is to redistribute the books in either the DAISY 3.0 format, the NISO DAISY format, or BRF, the electronic braille format.
So you will be providing an interface so that someone's not going to become familiar with an FTP client. They can just go to the web page, specify exactly where on their system the book is, and you'll take care of the transfer.
Precisely. We're trying to make it very easy to give us books. And the other thing that's interesting is we can take books from people who aren't qualified to be users. So, for instance, if sighted people want to scan in books or proofread them or, you know, write up synopses for them, they're welcome to do that, and you know, we have a volunteer agreement that we're putting the finishing touches on to allow people to help us that way. And that's getting a lot of excitement because it's a virtual volunteering opportunity. So you can live in a rural town and, you know, never have a chance to come near us, but you can help us out in our mission by volunteering over the Internet.
I know that sometimes when I scan a book, it's okay for me to read, but I would feel uncomfortable even if it was legal to share it with someone else because maybe there's just a few errors in it and one of the pages gets a bit scrambled. How are you going to deal with the quality control issues there?
You know, our initial audience are people who are pretty sophisticated about product quality in terms of scanned books. And we're taking some efforts to educate people that that's what they should expect, that this should be as good as they would have gotten from scanning the book or better, but it's not as good as you would get from a traditional library for the blind that spends a lot of time and effort to give you beautiful, high-quality material. And our initial returns, the books that we've been given so far, I'd say about half of them have been proofread. I wish we could hold that kind of ratio. Our initial goal is to try to build a large, interesting collection as fast as possible and then upgrade it in quality over time.
Open Book and Kurzweil 1000 both support the corrections file type system, and I suppose maybe there might be a section on the site at some point that provide hints about effective scanning and applying corrections and things.
We are actually working through, thanks to our long experience with scanning, what set of settings that we're recommending that people use. And so when people are scanning for us, we'll tell them, you know, please set your OCR engine to do these sorts of things and, you know, save it in this kind of a format. And, you know, we'll accept other things because we know, especially at the beginning, a lot of people have scanned them the way that they've chosen to scan them. And we would rather get the content quickly than quibble over what format it's in. So people are busy uploading us files, you know, that are in ASCII or Word or RTF or the proprietary formats that Open Book or Kurzweil or Win uses. And at the moment, we're taking it all because we want it all.
Okay. And they will also be expected to write a bit of a synopsis about the book?
That we're certainly asking for that, but we'll at this point we'll accept it anyway. I mean, I think the idea is that right now we feel the critical thing about Bookshare is getting a critical mass so that when a person goes and looks for a book at Bookshare, they find the book they're looking for most of the time. So that means we need tens of thousands of books, not a few hundred books or a thousand books. And so so our focus really is, you know, accept the books. There are people who are giving us hundreds of books on a CD, or there's one person that, you know, promised us several thousand books, and we're not going to tell them, wait, we want you to fill out this form for each of the 4,000 books. No, we're not doing that. We're saying, thank you very much, and we'll have our volunteers take it from there. But when someone is uploading a single book to us, yes, the form that's on our website is saying, could you please put in the name, the title, the copyright information, and if you've read the book, you know, a synopsis would go great.
Okay, so that's the process of getting a book to you. What about the process of becoming a user of Bookshare and browsing the books and downloading the ones that you want?
Okay, I'll tell you, this is sort of the way we've designed the system, and, you know, the next few months as we go through beta, we'll sort of nail this down. But our goal is that any person can go to our website and search our database like it was Amazon.com. And not only are we planning on listing the books that we have available, we're trying to build cooperation with as many other suppliers of accessible books as possible so that not only will you get the listings of those books that meet your search criteria that come from us that you can download right away, you know, it might be great to know that, the National Braille Press is selling a Braille version of that book for $25. Or the American, you know, Printing House has a version, or RFB&D has that book on tape. And that way, the consumer gets to make a choice of, do I want to download this right away and listen to it, and maybe it's scanned and has some errors, or can I afford to wait a couple weeks? So that's sort of piece one. When you actually go to download, if the book that you have chosen is copyrighted, then a lot of restrictions kick in. For one thing, the initial implementation is going to be for U.S. citizens only. Because of the way that this exception in the copyright law is written, we don't think we can sign up customers in other countries. And I need to expand on that later. But I think that's something, because our goal is to expand it to as many other countries as legally possible, but we have to get back to that.
Okay.
To download the content, if you're an American resident or citizen, you need to have proven to us that you qualify for this exception under the copyright law. This is the same exception that Recording for the Blind and Dyslexic or the Library of Congress's NLS is using. And so it might be a letter from your doctor certifying that you're visually impaired. It might be a proof that you're receiving services from RFB&D or NLS. It may be a letter from your school psychologist saying that yes, you qualify for special services because of your disability. And so we require some kind of what we call out of band, something that's not over the internet, to prove that you qualify for these services, and then you get an account and a password. And from that moment forward, the copyrighted material you get is keyed to your account and password.
Okay. I realize you might not want to be too forthcoming with information about that, but I mean, can you actually effectively key a BRF file to an account and password?
We can insert in the BRF the fact that you downloaded it.
Okay.
And in the certainly in the files, there'll be marks. There'll be codes in the file that indicate that it was you that downloaded it. And kind of the approach that we took was the general digital rights management approach is to lock up the book really hard and let you just get access to it in little pieces. And that's one of the biggest problems that blind people have, say, with PDF as it's often implemented or Microsoft Reader, is because they're trying to protect the content so hard, they make access very, very difficult. We decided to go in a different direction. We do encrypt the books, but we encrypt them to the individual, and the individual has the ability to put in their password, open up the lock, and pull the book out, and then use it. They can download it into a Braille note or a Braille Speak or a Braille Light. They can print it out in a Braille printer. They can put it through Braille transcription. They can look at it in large print. They can use it in Open Book or Kurzweil product or JAWS or WindowS, whatever you basically our goal is that the individual gets the book in a form where they can take it and use it the way they would like to use it. And the bargain is they've signed an agreement with us that says when they get content from us, they can do all those great things for themselves, but they're not going to send Bookshare content off to other people. And part of the deal is they're going to sign a contract saying that. And that made the publishers happier.
Yes.
Because the disadvantage of the one lock, fits all books is that when someone's broken the lock, then people, can break the lock on every book, and you have no idea who's the bad actor. And so instead what we're telling our users are, hey, we're putting some codes in your books that say that it was you that downloaded it, and the balancing act of that deal is that you get a lot of freedom with that book. But please, don't post it on the internet, because if the publishers come and say one of your content, books showed up on the internet, and we look at it, and it's got your fingerprints in it, we're going to go to you and say, gee, what went wrong?
Or something.
and suspend your services, and if the publishers really get mad, obviously they could do a lawsuit, but I'm not too worried about that end. I think that, I have a inherently good view of people and expect that if you tell them what the expectations are and why it's in their interest to be a good member of the community, they'll live up to that. And I'd rather plan on that than plan on trying to, triple lock it and make it unusable.
But doesn't the success of programs like Napster somewhat destroy your faith in people's ability to behave?
There's a lot of deconstruction of the Napster phenomena. And, the whole idea of Bookshare, neat Bookster, came to me because the turn of the millennium, January 2000, the acting CEO of Napster lived two doors down from me. And her son infected my teenage son with Napster. And that's where the idea for Bookshare came from. And so I have a pretty good flavor that I think that the world of content providers has learned a lot from the Napster experience. And where Napster wanted to go, and they're not going to get there, but it was the right answer, is not freely sharing everyone's intellectual property for free. It was that the record publishers made it so hard to access music that when something like Napster came along, you know, the consumers blew the doors off. But if people had made it easy to subscribe to music, I think it would be analogous to the way people approach software. I think that the rates of piracy on software is quite low in the United States and in many other countries. It's high in other countries. Why? Because we've culturally adjusted to the bargain. Copy protection's terrible. It's a pain. It makes your life miserable. So instead, you take copy protection off. You make the bargain with the user that they're not going to rip off the owner of the intellectual property, and then you have some judicious lawsuits that absolutely nail flagrant violators to the wall, and most people comply because the deal is good enough.
But
the balancing act is good enough. That's what Bookshare is about as well. I mean, we're talking about charging, we haven't set the final price, but, you know, less than $5 a month to be a member of Bookshare. And you can download all the scanned books that you like. You know, that will be enough, I think, after 1 or 2 years to support the website indefinitely, which is our goal financially, is to reach break-even. And we think that we'll get a big community of people who, you know, find Bookshare a great place to you know, help other people who are in a similar place and get a ton of benefit from it for what is essentially a nominal cost. And I think that that's probably the right answer in the music area as well. Maybe it's not a nominal cost, but, you know, I think people would go there if it was possible.
Yes, yes, I'm sure they would. And in any sense, the recording industry brought Napster on themselves. I'm interested in your views of the state of the union, as it were, in terms of software, because it seems that Microsoft is disagreeing with your analysis. Because with Windows XP, and indeed they did some experiments in New Zealand and a few other countries with Office 2000, and they've now extended that to the entire Office XP market, that they're introducing additional copy protection now.
Yep, and I think that they are running some risks doing so, and I obviously don't think it's a great idea. I think that it will give significant impetus to the open source movement. So in other words, by making it harder and by raising the bar, they're going to encourage alternatives. But that's a choice that they're making. But I mean, they have a lot of issues with XP that aren't related purely to this. But, you know, the civil libertarians here are saying, so let me get this straight. I install software from Microsoft, and they start a encrypted channel of data communication between my PC and Microsoft corporate and send lots of information to Microsoft about my PC, and I don't know what it is because that's a proprietary secret.
Yeah.
Ah! But, you know, and you know, it's probably not at all as bad as all that, but it doesn't look good. So anyway, it's certainly a challenge, and Microsoft is big enough and can dictate terms that it will certainly work for a while, and it'll be interesting to see how it plays out.
Okay. Now, returning to the regularly scheduled programs and talking about Bookshare, the BRF file option is going to be great for those people who have access to note-takers. What else reads BRF? Did you say OpenBook reads a BRF file?
I don't think OpenBook reads BRF at this moment.
I know Kurzweil does.
I think Kurzweil does.
Yeah, it does, yeah.
You know, instead, if you're going to be using this in OpenBook or Kurzweil, you're not going to be using BRF. You're going to be getting the book in a DAISY format from us, and then there'll be a conversion from DAISY into a format that is much better suited to those programs. And we're still debating what that is, but it might well be RTF.
Yeah, that would make sense. It's a pretty universally accepted standard these days.
Right, and you know, back translation involves some loss of data, with some confusion. Some back translations won't be quite correct, and if you go to RTF, you won't have any loss of text.
So why not RTF in the first place? Why did you decide to go with the DAISY option?
The law. The law that makes this legal in the U.S. says, you know, puts a bunch of restrictions on how this works. You have to be a nonprofit entity whose primary mission is serving the information needs of people with disabilities. yay, we qualify because we're the renamed version of Arkenstone, so we've been doing it for 10 years. You have to deliver it in a disability-specific format. And so RTF and Word and ASCII don't qualify. But, you know, NISO DAISY and BRF do. And so what our plan is that we deliver the book to your machine in one of these approved formats. And it'll also be encrypted. And then once it's on your machine, then you open it up, you know, do the decryption, and tell it what format you want to use it in. And you may use it in the DAISY format, and we're looking at providing a DAISY reading tool with the product, with the service. Or if you already have existing adaptive technology, you'll transform it into some file format that your AT likes, and you'll take it from there. And because you're making that choice, taking that action, it's not us delivering it to you in that commercial format. We delivered it to you in a blindness-specific format, and then you took it from there under fair use concepts for your own personal needs.
And this is just DAISY text, right, not audio?
Correct, but we're exploring already the extension of this technology to audio. And one of the cool things that happened this week is that AT&T announced their Natural Voices text-to-speech engine, which is light years ahead of the text-to-speech engines that we're used to in the blindness field. And you know, it's probably not going to be on your desktop next week because I think it takes a lot of RAM, like 256 megs or more. But it's much more natural sounding. And so we can imagine people using this next generation of text-to-speech either on their desktop if they have a high-end desktop or generating MP3s from proofread text files and creating a talking book that we could deliver to a DAISY reader for someone who doesn't have a computer. And that's exciting.
Another question then, is it legal for somebody to send you MP3 files of existing available audiobooks for you to then convert into a proprietary DAISY format and give it to blind people?
You know, this question is coming up a lot, and we're still discussing with our lawyers what restrictions there are on this, but I would net it out to say a book that's already in electronic form, we generally can't take without the permission of the copyright holder. And that's because of the direction that people have taken with electronic content. They put locks on it, and we have a law here that you go to jail if you try to tamper with a lock like that, called the DMCA, and there's some famous lawsuits going on right this minute about that. They put license restrictions. So if you download an electronic book, you signed a license agreement that says you won't give it to anyone else. And this is a very different bargain with the author or the publisher than you have with a print book. You know, the deal with the print book is I'm selling you a copy, and then you can do whatever you like with it that's within fair use. So you can excerpt from it, you can scan it in and listen to it, and, you know, and do all these great things. But that doesn't fly in the electronic world. So we're actually, basically shying away from any electronic content unless it comes from the publisher or copyright holder with their permission for us to put it up on Bookshare. And the only exception to that is Project Gutenberg and the like for out of copyright material that they permit that explicitly.
Now because we're obviously talking to a worldwide audience here, last I checked it was almost 70 countries ACB radio was heard in now.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about the issues of whether at some point non-US citizens will be able to have access to this wonderful reservoir of material.
Well, let me tackle the first thing. I believe that there are many countries where a Bookshare-like service is legal, okay? And in the UK, the Royal National Institute for the Blind does a survey of laws and covers this topic. And so, for example, New Zealand, where you're from, Australia, Canada, the United States are all examples of countries where a service like Bookshare is almost certainly legal.
Yes.
In the UK, it's a grayer issue, and in places in continental Europe, I know it's explicitly illegal. And so that's the challenge, is because it involves copyright law, and copyright law has got, you know, an overlay of national restrictions with international conventions. It's a very complicated topic. But so we're interested in working with those libraries in those countries. If they want to license the Bookshare technology and put up a Bookshare of Canada or a Bookshare of New Zealand, we're excited about that. So then the next step comes is, can each of those collections be the sum of all the collections rather than just their own collections? And that's what we have our lawyers working away with, and we're talking to the publishers about, and finding out, can that be done? I'm pretty optimistic, but I've done more with lawyers on this project in the last year than in my entire 20-year career put together. So this is heavily involved in the legal issues.
ACB passed a resolution last year that talked about perhaps using mechanisms like the World Blind Union and the World Intellectual Property Organization to have some kind of international protocol on special format materials. Would you be in favor of that kind of approach?
Oh, indeed I would. And, you know, there are many people in the DAISY consortium, the basically the International Consortium of Libraries for People with Disabilities, that are pushing for that. I know the main person from Japan, Hiroshi Kawamura, is basically a big advocate that this is a human right.
Yep.
And it should be documented in these international covenants, much like you know, the international standard for sending Braille postage free exists.
Well, let's hope that we can all get together on that. So when are you launching Bookshare? Yeah?
We are moving the servers to sort of a production environment in the next month, and then we're hoping to be able to take uploads from volunteers over the Internet. And basically the goal is to go live with the full service by the end of this year in the U.S.
You're going to be using quite a bit of disk space and bandwidth, I would imagine.
Yes, but you know, we grabbed some of our top technical people on Bookshare from the Rocket eBook team, which is one of the leading commercial eBook teams. And, you know, we're just not as high performance as, you know, these commercial eBooks were, partly because, you know, in the blindness field, if you have 10 or 20 or 30,000 people involved in something, that's a tremendous success. And in the commercial world, that's far below what they're aiming for. So we can afford, for instance, to use open source, you know, servers, and we can fit all the books that we see for the next year on a single server and disk array. And we're hoping to bust at the seams as soon as we possibly can.
And you have in-house volunteers, I understand, who are critical to this project.
Yes, we have some limited number of in-house people, and we think that volunteers are going to be a key part to make this happen. To make this service break even, you know, financially, it can't involve tons of staff time. That's the fundamental difference between Bookshare and a more traditional library serving people with disabilities is, you know, they're depending on a staff, and they have a very high-quality standard. We're depending on our users primarily, backed up with volunteers, with an extremely thin staff to make the service viable. Because the people who are building the collection or choosing what books go in the collection are our users. And so, you know, they have a lot of power in saying that, and we're trying to facilitate our users to build that collection together.
Well, I mean, that's a fantastic story of empowerment in itself, really, because every special format library in the world gets criticism from people saying, why don't you do more of this particular type of book or whatever. So this is quite a revolution in that regard.
Oh, and you know, we all know that they have a limited budget.
Oh, yeah.
They deliver a very high-quality product, so I can feel for the position they're in, and, you know, our deal is that we can harness together the power of a large community. You know, there are 40,000 Arkenstone users out there. Well, that's a lot of people scanning.
Yeah, sure is. And you're going to be charging a subscription. Would that be levied on a yearly basis or monthly?
How will I think it will be on a yearly basis. And I just hired a new product manager to run the project in the last couple months, and she hasn't had a chance to really do all the financial analysis. But I keep saying things like, I don't think it's going to cost more than $50 a year.
Right.
And I hope we can make that happen. And, you know, one of the questions that's come up is, what if publishers want to sell electronic books to blind people through Bookshare? And, you know, these would be very high-quality, publication-quality books. And so there's a possibility that we may end up, you know, offering, you know, books for sale that are electronic for those publishers who've made the effort to make a version of the book that's accessible to a blind person. And we want to encourage that rather than discourage that. So, but I think for the content that's generated by the community, which, you know, for the foreseeable couple of years is going to be 99% of our content, you know, we're going to try and set the price very low and give people, you know, incentives and encouragement to upload as much content, you know, that they can, and encourage people to improve the quality of the content as well.
And when one goes to the website at bookshare.org, and that's already there, I am struck by the sense of community that you're attempting to create. For example, with the demo that brings up some titles by Dickens, you have a user review there. It is a lot like Amazon.com, really, in the way that it's the look and feel of the thing, really.
You know, I mean, a whole part of Benetech's goal is to bring some of the better models from the for-profit world to bear on some of the technology needs of the disabled. And, you know, we had an exciting time period bringing down the price of reading machines over the last, you know, 10 years. And you know, it's really a challenge to figure out a way to bring down the cost of reading machines more. But if you switch to this service model of delivering books over the Internet, your costs are a lot less. And so, so now we're providing the service of accessible books rather than the reading machine itself. And so we really are looking towards a customer base that's a combination of people with scanners who are investing the effort to scan the books and or proofread them. And there'll be a significant slice of the audience that, you know, are just school kids who sign up and get their 3 books from, you know, Bookshare and get 2 books from RFB&D. And, you know, the RFB&D books are probably, you know, much more usable, especially if they're on something like physics. But you know, they can get their novels through Bookshare, and they can get them right away.
And you have a newsletter that you're already running so that people can sign up at the Bookshare.org site.
Yes.
And be kept apprised of when you're launching and how things are developing.
And thank you for reminding me. I have to do the marketing thing. Yes, go visit Bookshare.org and check out what we're doing and sign up for the notices. And the other major thing is, don't delete a book that you scan. You know, to all the listeners, you know, we'll put them to great use. Save those books and save them as RTF if you can. And we'll try and find a way to help other people benefit from the labor you invested in creating that version of that book.
I might even send you some just so that I can, you know, prick your conscience about making sure you keep the international audience in the back of your mind there.
You know, right now we're still trying to figure out how to accept books from international folks.
Yeah, okay.
But as you and I are well aware, there are tens of thousands of books that we could tap outside the U.S., but again, I have to jump through some more legal hoops. So right now we're signing up volunteers from inside the U.S. for books.
I see. So you can't even accept books from international audience.
You know, I believe there has to be a way, but our lawyers have just said, let's do the stuff that's rock solid, clearly legal, and then try and figure out how to push it. We're having very cooperative discussions with the publisher's chief lawyers, and they are reviewing our contracts and giving us input and bringing up issues, and it's a very cooperative relationship. And so this is one of the issues that we've broached with them, but haven't gotten any detailed feedback, and so we're going to keep working away. But I would say that the major things is we're having, you know, detailed discussions with the Canadian National Institute for the Blind and with sort of their counterparts in the UK and Australia and New Zealand. I mean, the English-speaking world tends to have a similar legal structure that's more favorably inclined to this sort of a venture. And you know, all of those people have got lawyers looking at this issue.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that if a solution can be found, we will find it, whether it's, you know, doing electronic interlibrary loan or whatever it is.
And any other things going on at Benetech that you can tell us about at this stage?
Well, lots and lots. You know, I'd say that, you know, Arkenstone always was more open about what we were doing because we're a nonprofit, because of the structure encouraging that. And right now, you know, we're still doing some engineering work for Freedom Scientific, but that's been gradually fading away, and our engineers have been working more and more on new projects. We're working on such projects as talking PDAs and talking cell phones that are more accessible to blind people. We're looking at cell phone-based versions of the Strider technology, and you know that we're working with Mike May, who's a former Arkenstone executive who's busy working in that area, and Bill Schwegler, who's another former Arkenstone executive who heads a company in that area, in the general commercial information area, geographic information. We're trying to build a talking camera, sort of the size of a PDA that would have OCR and text-to-speech in it that would be able to read short things, kind of like a talking opticon, but trying to make it for, you know, a relatively affordable price. And make it very small, so it's something people carry around and read signs or business cards and the like. So we're just having a lot of fun looking at a lot of issues. I mean, Bookshare obviously has gotten, you know, has five or six people working on it full time, and has got a major mind share. A lot of these other projects have, you know, half a product manager and a quarter of an engineer looking at them. But our whole system is we have lots of ideas at the front end, and then we successfully winnow them down to the, you know, one or two or three big projects we're able to do every year.
Now, all of that's very exciting stuff. The cell phone project, are you working with other manufacturers of existing cell phones? I take it you're not looking at bringing a completely new cell phone to market?
I would say the common thread to all these projects is trying to build some great adaptive technology that is software-only, or nearly software-only. So what we're trying to do is get the price benefit of a Palm Pilot or, you know, a similarly priced device or a cell phone that's from a commercial manufacturer, and then add the software. And though that's not tremendously practical today, you know, we can sit down with the makers of all these products, which we have great connections with thanks to being located in Silicon Valley and having all the supporters and friends we have. And they can say, well, yeah, in 18 months, no problem. Text-to-speech will run on this device. Or, yes, you'll have wireless connectivity that will enable this kind of an application. And we are collaborating with manufacturers of cell phones and the people who make chipsets and such on cell phones. We're cooperating with people like Sun and IBM because we're interested in technology they've developed. And we've had good relationships with them in the past. You know, we continue to talk to Microsoft and hope that, you know, somewhere there'll be something that works there. And just trying to fill exciting technology gaps that we don't see somebody else being able to fill as well or not filling at all.
Mm.
Because we're not trying to make another screen reader.
Because Section 255 of the Telecommunications Act and the regulations pursuant to that make the time absolutely perfect for telecommunications work that you're doing.
Well, and I don't know if you know, I sat on the 255 Advisory Committee.
Okay.
And helped write some of the regulations that are now in place. And the key concept there is that makers of telecom equipment have to make their stuff accessible if it's readily achievable. And readily achievable is a very low standard. It's kind of like, if it's really easy, you should do it. And almost no one's done anything, right?
Well, I'm wondering, yes.
Yeah, well, that's the disability advocate's assessment is that very little has happened.
Mm.
And so if Benetech can take an off-the-shelf Qualcomm cell phone or Motorola cell phone from the next generation and make it talk and make it really work perfectly for a person with disabilities, well, that kind of demonstrates readily achievable.
You see, I'm interested in your assessment of this. I have a Motorola phone in my pocket right now. It's the Motorola L series. It's a GSM phone, and it's been around for a good couple of years or more. It has the ability to assign, with the help of a sighted person, voice commands to menu functions, so that as you up and down arrow through the menu, you get your voice telling you as you arrow past each menu function. And you can also speak that keyword that you've programmed into the menu if you want to shoot straight there. And you can also assign voice tags to numbers that you wish to call on a regular basis, which is a more common feature. The menus is, you know, is a really good one. The voice tags are getting more and more common. My point is that I'm not sure whether the issue is really achievability or whether it's just that people don't understand what we need, in the sense that if you've assigned a voice tag to a phone number and the telephone is caller ID capable so that you can see who's calling you, why isn't the voice tag spoken over the earpiece when the call comes in? It seems to me that that's a very simple software issue and that the manufacturers just don't get it in terms of what we want.
You've hit the nail on the head. There's no reason why cell phones can't work, have every single one of their features work great for blind people, and it's just that, you know, I mean, I'm not saying that the cell phone makers are doing this deliberately, it's just, you know, there's a new legal requirement, they're not really on top of it, there are very few people who are showing them the way, and, you know, I mean, people like Greg Vanderheiden at the Trace Center has made a reference design for a cell phone that is very accessible for people with a wide array of disabilities, including blindness. But no one's building that. And I think that they're not going to build it, but if I can say, hey, you know, there are three or four major chipsets being used in development environments for cell phone applications, and we write a software package that does all the things that you just described, because they're already intrinsically there,
yeah,
and make it possible for someone to buy a cell phone that maybe costs an extra $50, or maybe even better, the cell phone manufacturer pays us what it costs us to develop it, and then it's freely available to anyone who wants to download it from the manufacturer. You know, call this 800 number and we'll upload your phone with the blindness specific, you know, text-to-speech or recordings or whatever. You know, amortize that over a couple million handsets and it's not a lot of money. But
Is the issue, though, that there has yet to be some legal defining through the courts of what readily achievable actually means?
You are correct, and, you know, some disability advocates are picking, you know, good lawsuits out. But, for instance, 508, which is the federal law that says the federal government here has to make things accessible, is a much easier case to make. And so I think people are concentrating more on the federal government's choices just because of the way the law is structured. But actually, that's the way these things actually get implemented, is that the law is passed and then some lawsuits define the real parameters. And you know, our goal is to give the advocates some technology ammunition in that, and that at some point the manufacturers will come to us and say, you know, either, yes, we want to license your software, or, okay, you did your software, and I see how it works. Okay, we can go off and do it ourselves. And since I'm a nonprofit, both of those answers are perfectly acceptable.
The joys of the litigious society, eh?
That's right.
Just about the Strata technology, are people actually using that now? I mean, we probably need to catch up with Mike about this, because it's been a while since we've chatted to him. Is that out there reaching the average blind person, walking around, getting directions with it?
Mike is actually selling the Strider technology now. And that is one of the things that's happened over the last year, is that rather than just being a prototype that Mike has had for a few years and a couple other select people, he actually can sell the product now and you can buy it. You know, is it wildly successful? Not yet, partly because, you know, it requires a laptop or a sub-notebook kind of size platform, plus Mike's software and the like. And so Mike is selling that actively right now, and I think he just expanded into Canada with Canadian Maps. And I think that he's busy looking at ways to make this work on other platforms and to continue, you know, bringing it to a better place to reach a lot more people. And Mike is definitely the guy to talk to about that.
Yeah, that's such an exciting prospect, that you have a GPS-capable cell phone that will then be speaking instructions. That's just incredible.
Yeah, and you know, there will be commercial services that are probably usable by blind people in some countries within you know, a year.
Well, I don't know whether you realize that New Zealand is actually a bit of a test lab for some of this stuff because of our ability to adopt new technology and quite a modern infrastructure and being a small country. And they're talking about within the next month or three turning on a feature where the cell phone will know pretty much where you are. And if you have a WAP-capable phone, which again is not accessible to us,
right,
you'll be able to hear where the nearest restaurants are or what the nearest movie theaters are playing, all that kind of stuff.
And I mean, isn't that the problem? You know, in theory, all the pieces exist. You could be using them, but the user interface, no one thought about blind people. Well,
yeah. And that's the frustration. You know, we've had to spend so much time battling, you know, companies like Microsoft, and it's not perfect, but we've made some huge progress in the last few years. And somehow we've all got to make sure we turn our guns on these appliances because it's getting pretty serious.
Well, and that's one of the reasons why our interests have shifted to doing more work in the appliance space and doing more work that's more services-based, you know, where you pay us $5 or $10 or $15 a month to have a certain set of capabilities rather than, and then use that on top of a $100 or $300 device rather than having to buy, you know, a much more expensive device. And that's the way, I mean, as you're probably aware, PC sales have kind of plateaued, and device sales are exploding, and yet most of them aren't that usable by blind people, and surely they'll have enough power where they should be accessible to blind people, so we just have to bridge that gap.
Well, I look forward to keeping in touch with you because I could talk forever about all of these wonderful things that you're doing, and I appreciate you sparing so much of your time to have a chat to us. Good luck with Bookshare. It's going to be a revolution.
Thank you very much. We really appreciate it, and definitely have people stop by Bookshare.org and, you know, keep track of it as it expands and takes over the world. No, I mean, helps people get much greater access to books. Thank you very much.